This episode of Current Geek is brought to you in part by patreon.com/frogpants. If you'd like to support this and other shows on the Frog Pants Network, do it today at patreon.com/frogpants.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Well, hello, Scott Johnson. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm not wearing a stitch. How'd you know?
I'm wearing a stitch, but that's it.
Stitch in your side.
It is the 2nd of January, 2015, so quite literally, we're like second day in, not even a full 2 days into the new year, and so far, so good. Seems all right.
I'm so done with this year, man. I can't wait till next... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I was just saying on Twitter, I have only heard people use the term bay 3 times so far.
Yeah.
That's a downward trend, yeah.
Gotcha.
I haven't seen... Let's see. What other things was I hoping would go away?
I've noticed a trend this year for days to be colder.
Yeah, that's happening.
You know?
That's happening here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just LA and stuff. In fact, I know you you guys have had weird temperatures. There was snow in Vegas for me last week. That was weird.
Was it really? Yeah, that happens. I can remember a couple of snowy days in CES land.
Yeah. Very strange. I had never seen that. The people at the McDonald's we were pulled into when I saw the snow, couldn't believe it. Like, the employees were just having a complete wig out. first time in their lives they had seen such things.
My goodness, what is this frozen water falling from the sky?
But man, 2014 kind of came and went fast. It represents the year that Current Geek was resurrected and made
That's
new.
That's right. That's right. We've got a whole year under our belts now.
In fact,
we're old.
I want to say
old podcast.
It's either the 3rd or the 6th. I'd have to go back and look. But one of those 2 days was our first. Well, I can tell you here. Let's see. Our first episode.
It's been the 3rd, I think.
That's ringing a bell. Let's see here. Hold on.
Well, because the first DTNS was the 2nd. And I think that was a Thursday.
Oh my gosh, you're totally right. We're literally doing this the day before our exact 1 year anniversary. Wow, yep. That's great. I didn't even plan on that. That's great. Well, here we are. Now, you may notice we haven't introduced any guests. That's because there are none.
No guest of 2015 is good enough for us yet. we're raising our standards.
And we're not even doing this live. We're like just gathering around our own personal fireplace.
We're alive.
Yeah, well, we're live together.
Not, yeah, we're not streaming it.
Mm-mm. And I got my little smoking jacket on. You've got your weird red slippers.
I have my Mr. Rogers sweatshirt on and my comfy shoes.
Yeah, all those things. They all contribute to ultimately provide a fine, hopefully hypnotic entertainment experience for those listening at home. As we go through the things we think were maybe of the most note for the year, kind of the geekiest moments in the news. Things we covered, some we didn't. Things that are personal, things that are more broad and kind of affect us all.
Yeah, some of it's our geekiest moments of the year. Some of it's just like things we think were pretty darn cool for people who like geeky things.
Yeah, and I would say the first one you put on this list, I think kind of stands out as maybe one of the big ones, and that is The Force Awoke. We got a trailer. We have actual knowledge of what's happening, at least some knowledge of what's happening or what's coming.
I mean, I actually still remember where I was when I found out that Star Wars was going to happen again, that there was going to be another movie. I was lying on my bed in the afternoon after coming home from doing Tech News Today in San Rafael, California. I was reading Twitter on my iPad and I saw MG Sigler post, "There's going to be a new Star Wars movie." And I don't remember word for word what it was, but that's how excited I was.
Yeah.
About that. And so when I found out that The Force Awakens was going to be shown on a trailer Thanksgiving, like any movie, you could just pick any movie and go and The Force Awakens would happen as long as you pick the right theater. I was way excited. Like this was a big geeky moment in general, but also personally, like I was more excited than I expected to be.
Yeah, I was too. I didn't do the whole like let's get a movie reserved and go see it thing because I had this feeling that the internet would get it either before or right around it did. Yeah, and it totally did. And that's the thing maybe that distinguished this whole Star Wars movement thing apart from the stuff when I was a kid and the prequels. And that is that the internet is a thing that did not really exist, at least in the form it did in 99 that you would have had today. And what really set this thing apart was just the level of fervor, the level of like meme appropriation the minute that thing hit the web, and how quickly like parody videos were going up, people making fun of the lightsaber, jokes about Abrams using too much screen.
There was a lens flare in the trailer. Yeah,
sure. All those things, like, it just went crazy. And I got to thinking, man, imagine if this kind of environment existed during all of the key moments in our past when it came to major moments like this. And it has me slightly concerned that we're all, and this is all part of whether or not I want to consume it or not, but I feel like we're partly kind of responsible. If this thing's bad, we're partly responsible for kind of ruining it, if you know what I'm trying to get at. Like, too much, not the hype so much, but just so much like coverage, and there's Twitter and there's Facebook and there's a billion photoshopped images and 1,000 articles online that are trying to describe what they think is happening in the, you know, in these scenes in this very short thing, that at the end of it all, are we even getting, I mean, is the movie just a sideline moment? Like, I mean, obviously it isn't, but you know what I mean? Like, it just feels overwhelming as compared to what it used to be. It was all mystery before.
You know what's funny is that reaction felt more legitimately as a, it felt, let me start over again. All that right. Reaction felt like a more legitimate concern in the days when we didn't have much choice. Mm. When mass culture put things upon us, right? Yeah. There were only a couple of movies a week and 3 channels on broadcast television, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and so you kind of, you know, you felt like hype was created, right? Mm-hmm. These days, we create the hype, and not everything that people want to be hyped stays hyped.
Yeah.
So I have a funny feeling when you say, like, are we, you know, is the hype being overbuilt? Because it's genuine, I think.
Yeah. But it's just,
you know,
so,
and you can
so
argue
multiplied.
Whether it should be genuine,
sure.
Whether we, you know, people are dumb for the, myself included, for being this excited when you've been burned before.
Sure.
But I'm like, you know what? This is not me getting excited because I've been tricked into the hype machine. It's me genuinely wanting to see this story continue in good hands. It was the first thing I tweeted after coming out of seeing the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie in Honolulu. Mm-hmm. We were on vacation.
I remember this.
We went and saw it, and I walked out and said, "Dear J.J. Abrams, can you do Star Wars next?"
Yeah.
And in my head, I was thinking reboot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, like, you just took a venerable franchise and you handled it so well.
Sure.
In redoing it, changing things, but redoing it. And so this isn't exactly what I meant, but I think that's part of my faith. It's like, wow, I've really liked not every single thing, but a lot of things that J.J. Abrams has done. And I really want to see this story continue. And I haven't seen or heard any of the rumors come out that make me cringe.
Yeah.
I'll admit the ball droid from the trailer, a little cheesy, but in a world where Jar Jar existed, not that cheesy. Yeah.
Or even R2 and C-3PO existed, it's not that cheesy, you know?
Yeah.
It still kind of fits. I'm with you, and I think what I'm feeling is the overwhelming multiplication of excitement, because it's no longer just me and a few of my dopey friends in high school.
It's like a reaction to the reaction.
Yeah. Man. It's not just a few of us going, dude, did you hear about The Last Crusade? It's coming, you know, like, that was a limited scope. This is so much bigger. It's not only my local friends, it's not just family, it's all my extended family and friends that live all over the world, and they're all speaking at once, and it's just a very different kind of fandom.
Are you saying it's like a million voices crying out at once?
It kind of is, yeah. Yeah. And so here's what I've made a decision. So this isn't a New Year's resolution or anything, but in a way it is a resolution about Star Wars, and it's this. I have decided, rather than to be cynical or skeptical about that and about that change, I'm embracing this. I am, in fact, willing to go all the way to the end when the movie's finally out and we can make a judgment for ourselves of how this holds up and how it does, and, you know, what in what hands we gave it, did it turn out okay, and all those things. That's great. Come good, come bad, this part of it is also really fun. And there's no reason why we can't enjoy the hype train and ride it together and communicate about it, disagree about it, you know, have differing opinions about what's great, what isn't great, what they should change or shouldn't change, what's canon, what isn't canon. Like, that's part of the machine now. And I don't know why I would want to complain about that much more stuff to do around Star Wars. So, and it's also optional, you know?
That's the thing. Like, sure, if you're like Jeff Cannata, who never wants to know anything about a movie before he goes and sees it. Yeah. He wants to preserve that. There's other people. I don't mean to pick on Jeff. No. He's just the most widely known example I can think of. Yep. There's lots of people like that. That's one thing. That's a different thing. And I can see you being very frustrated with the pervasiveness of this because it's hard to avoid.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you could avoid the hype. You don't have to go read every story about The Force Awakens that comes out, right? You can choose to reserve it. You've got so much more control over what you can consume than you've ever had before. I'm just gonna enjoy it. I'm with you, man. Yeah. I think it's a great way to approach it, which is like, don't fear, don't hope. just go along for the ride. I'm the stupid optimist who tries to like things long after I should cut my losses.
Sure.
And leave them. I saw The Phantom Menace 3 times, for God's sake.
Oh, good Lord. In the theater you saw it?
In the theater,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, Tom, goodness.
Yeah, with the first month that it came out. Because I kept wanting to pick up details from the story. These days, I would just go to Wikipedia, but there's no Wikipedia there.
Mm-hmm. So. You didn't have a little second screen on the couch. You couldn't do all the things we do now. And that's what's going to make this so much more interesting, because it's not in a vacuum anymore. It's not a thing where one thing is made and then it's just fed to the masses like bread to the plebeians who are all outside the city walls. This time, it's like we're all kind of in the joint, you know? We're all in it. And hopefully, we're in it to win it. So we'll see how it goes. So yeah, The Force Awakens, kind of a big deal this year. I also think landing that robot on a comet was kind of a big deal.
That was another one of my personal geeky moments, and I also think a widespread moment for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I got up early and turned on NASA TV and streamed ESA on my web page, on my laptop, just on my web page. Man, I'm out of practice.
Your web page.
On my web page on my GeoCities. I was, you know, finding the best place to watch who had the best coverage, because I was really excited about it. And what's funny is Eileen caught that excitement and she got up. She's like, okay, this lander. And then when they landed, she's like, well, where is it? And I'm like, well, it's just data telling them.
Yeah, there's no video of Bruce
Willis
there.
There's not a camera.
Yeah, he's not hanging out on that.
And she was like, oh, she's kind of disappointed. I mean, she was still excited, but she was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. Mm. But I was just so thrilled because we landed a robot on a freaking comet. I was just as thrilled when what's-his-name jumped out of, you know, the capsule from the edge of space and landed on the ground on 2 feet. Mm. Like, these are just amazing things that we have never done before. Like, literally never done before. We have never caught a comet and landed on it with a robot from, you know, thousands and thousands of kilometers away. It's a really, I don't think people appreciate how difficult a thing it is to do.
No, the math alone gives me headaches at night. Like, I can't even imagine what it took to calculate the timing, trajectory, all of the sort of planning and needs and backup and what happens if this happens and all the contingencies.
And the fact that a couple of things went wrong, mm-hmm. and it didn't go perfect, and yet they still got loads of incredible science out of it.
Yeah. To me, it's heartening. It's a human race kind of moment. It's a historic as hell. And again, you're not wrong about people not fully appreciating it. I think there are a lot of people who just plain don't get it. I made a real point of trying to get my kids all into this and say, look, you guys, you got to understand, you've grown up on a bunch of science fiction, because I forced that all down your throats, and that all seems easy to you because you've seen it all on screen. So that stuff's just a big deal. It's like, oh, we've been to a comet. Well, haven't we already done that? Like, there's almost a feeling.
Can't we just take our warp drives out to Jupiter?
Exactly. But instead, these guys showed that you could hit a bird with a pea shooter from 60 miles away and do it accurately. And it's incredible. So yeah, more space stuff in 2015 would be my hope. And I know there's
a couple of big missions. There's a mission to Pluto that will arrive and give us closer pictures and data than we've ever had before there. And there's the mission to the asteroid belt that's going to arrive at Vesta, which is the largest object in the asteroid belt, which has frozen water.
Ooh, yeah, that's exciting. I was listening to some stuff about that last night. That is exciting. Now, speaking of big
but
things.
Scott, hold on, because we've never been to Vesta before. I just want to point out that makes all of humanity Vestal virgins.
Ah, look at that. That's pretty good.
I had to work at that one.
You did. I sort of saw it coming up the street, but it wasn't until it honked at me.
Ambling
cut me off. Yeah, it's fine now. Someone will clean it up. Speaking of big things, I feel like phones and devices refine, you know, they're always refining themselves, iterating on themselves. I feel like this year they refined up. And what I mean by that is in size. You have a you have one down here about phones becoming big and that becoming the norm. How do you feel about that now, months into the wider acceptance of it? Because, you know, Android people have been accepting it for a while, but
In limited numbers. And it was funny, I remember when the first Note came out, and I think it was only 5 inches, if I remember right. Might have been 5.3. Mm. I'll look that up real quick. But I remember when it came out, people saying, that is a ridiculous large phone. Like, why would you ever want a phone that big? It's hilariously big. Mm-hmm. And now, like, your standard phone is bigger than that. Yeah. We went to the store. Eileen just bought, all my stories about Eileen this year. Eileen just bought a new phone. She bought a Note 4. Yeah. And she bought it because she thought the Nexus 6 was too big. But she wanted the better phone. She read that the Note 4 was better than the Galaxy S5. So she went for the Note 4. And you know, the fact that the iPhone 6 Plus is such a big seller, it just made me realize the big phones, man. That's the norm. What was laughably big is now standard.
It is. I saw some anecdotal evidence here. I was in Las Vegas for 8 days over the holidays, and it was bananas. People everywhere. I've never seen so many people. And I do not like the late 2014, early 2015 trend of selfie sticks. I don't know if you've seen.
It was a 5.3 inch screen.
Oh, 5.3.
For the first
one. Oh, you're right. There it is.
Yeah. So it was big.
Selfie sticks were everywhere. That really annoyed me. But on these selfie sticks and in the hands of people, especially the Asian tourists, for some reason, they all had iPhone 6s, tons of iPhone 6s specifically.
I don't know why the iPhone 6s, but the selfie stick was popularized in Japan.
Oh, man.
I don't know if it originated there, but that's where people really took to it, and it kind of spread from there.
That might be why. That may have been why I saw so many in Las Vegas, because there were many Japanese tourists there.
Because in Italy, when we went to Rome earlier this year, same thing. Tons of selfie sticks. I'd never seen them before, really. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they were all in the majority were in the hands of Japanese tourists.
I really don't like them. They drive.
The selfie sticks.
The selfie sticks, not the Japanese people.
Let me hasten to point out.
They're fine people. But those selfie sticks, they kind of need to go. But anyway, so many iPhone 6 Pluses, just ridiculous in numbers. And then close behind that, lots of Note 3s and 4s. And by far, though, just killing it were the iPhone 6 Pluses. And I got to thinking, we've done this thing. We've done this thing where we've now gone to a bigger size. And I did a thing when the iPhone 6 came out. I had to do an upgrade, so I bought a 6. I said, I don't want to go crazy. I'm not going to buy a giant landing pad. Yeah, I don't need that. I'm going to get a standard-ass 6, 4.7 inch. That's the wave of the future. And I picked that up, and I was very happy with it and have been happy with it since. But I got to tell you, after 7 days of seeing so many people with those things, part of me is a little bit wondering if I should have gone bigger. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know why. It's weird peer pressure or something. I'm just feeling left out, just slightly.
I find that, and I got an iPhone 6. Yeah. I find that it is just fine.
Yeah, it is. It is just fine. Why am I? I'm feeling this. This is just dumb peer pressure, dude.
Well, and I, you know, like I said, Eileen just got a Note 4, and she's sitting there on the couch playing with the Note 4. She's sitting there saying things like, "Maybe I don't need a tablet."
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what?
Because you're halfway there.
No, those are different things. Of course, I just got a Nexus 9 tablet, which I love.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, no, but for video and you need the big screen for certain things. Mm-hmm. But what is amazing to me, I wish I could find a good link to this article. I found links and then they die. But Scientific American had an article with, I think, some MIT students or researchers. I want to say like 98, 99.
Okay.
Where they predicted that in the future, our devices would be differentiated by size more than function.
Mm.
And they said, you know, so when you're at home, you'll want a larger screen. You'll want a big screen to watch, you know, videos on, and you'll want a smaller screen than that, but still large to do your work on. But then you'll have mobile screens. And they talked about devices being, and we've hit that. We have now fulfilled that article entirely. We have a device at every screen size.
Yeah, that's crazy if you think about it and how quickly we got there. I don't know. Feels like we're settling in for what the standard form factor for our portable computing world is. And that's where we're at, man. These aren't even phones anymore. I noticed yesterday, without even any ceremony, suddenly my phone calls are over LTE and everyone sounds better. Didn't even tell me.
Oh, you got the LTE, the voice over LTE.
Just switched. Just happened.
It's kind of amazing when you're like, oh, this is what the phone's supposed to sound like.
For a minute, I thought, am I on FaceTime audio? Like, what did I do here? And Kim's like, I didn't do anything. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they switched it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. A bold year for what people wanted to put in their pocket. And it's surprising how big they wanted it to be.
I'm telling you, the next big area of innovation that I can't wait for someone to attack is input method. Mm. You know, we've got lots of like yoga form factor from Lenovo and different ways of doing keyboards and on-screen keyboards and, you know, projected keyboards even. Give me something that can really get rid of the keyboard. And voice is not it. Voice can replace the keyboard sometimes.
Sure.
But there are times when I can't speak out loud.
Yeah.
When I'm on the subway, you know, I don't want to be sitting there talking to myself. I got to do something silent. Or if you're in a movie theater, even, you know, put it away during the movie. But before the movie, I don't want to sit there talking. Mm-hmm. There's lots of times when I can't speak out loud. So I'm waiting for that idea that's like, this is better than the keyboard, but still applicable in all situations.
It sure doesn't feel like... I'll say this. It feels like that will be an innovation that none of us expected. It will be a thing that will go... We didn't know we could do. Like touch came along and blew our minds, not because we didn't think touch wouldn't eventually be a thing people could do. It's that it had come so far suddenly. Like, you can actually do it. That's what I think surprised people then. But I think this next thing, whatever that is, that next way of interfacing that you're talking about will have to be something that you and I right now can't think of. And because I don't know what else it would be.
We're old men, we'll resist using it.
That's right. If it's going to be like... eye tracking. Yeah. I'm going to complain. Well, my left eye doesn't move.
If I had to guess, and I don't think this will be it, but if I had to guess, the thing that shows the most promise is the technology that can read your lips without you speaking.
Oh, weird.
So you just mouth words, and then it's like voice recognition, and it just takes everything down.
Part of me is freaked out by that idea, just because I don't want to see people mouthing things at their devices, you know?
Yeah.
It's a little weird. It's a little freaky. But hey, whatever. There's a lot of things we do now that we would have called freaky 20 years ago.
Totally.
When you and I are old, let's see what the kids are up to.
Hey, I just thought of a geeky moment that I didn't put in the notes.
Please.
Just to slip in real quickly because it goes right along with that, which is Back to the Future 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Is now 2015.
It's now happening. And so I saw a big
people
list.
People won't shut up about it. I know, but yeah.
I saw a big list of all the things that didn't happen that were supposed to. Hoverboards are the easy one. A bunch of other stuff. And it is funny to watch. I feel like if I'm going to make a movie about the future, I want to far fling that thing so that I know it's at least past a couple of more wars that wipe out everything because, you know, you don't want it to get there and realize how wrong or how off you were. And that's where they're at now with that. Like, I think that's the worst movie of the trio anyway, so it doesn't bother me too much. I don't think it's a very good movie, but I love 1 and 3. Most people hate 3. I love 3.
It's your kids, Scott.
It's your kids, Marty. They didn't quite nail it, but Sketch Dailies on Twitter is doing an awesome run of people's doodles and sketches of things that are related to Back to the Future and the series, mostly 2, and it's fantastic to watch. So if there's anything good to come out of that kind of mediocre, terrible middle act, it's that people are drawing some funny stuff today. Off of my list, I felt like it was, I mean, this is, I don't know, this says a lot more about me personally, but I think a lot of gamers are feeling this way. I was blown away by one of my favorite video game companies in the world. We're all there at BlizzCon this year. You were there. I was there. A lot of friends were there. I was blown away that this company I've known for so long yet knew kind of what they were going to always do predictably. Like, they're going to make another Diablo. They'll keep making WoW. They're going to make another strategy game. They'll StarCraft will have another expansion. Like, you just kind of knew the safe zone where Blizzard stays, and they don't really get out of that zone. And they got up, and they got totally out of that zone. Not just the zone of what kind of game it is, because that's something they definitely did. But the Overwatch reveal also took them out of their comfort zone when it came to tone and style. And that, I nerded out. I completely nerded out. A piece of me felt like a kid. A piece of me felt like a 20-something-year-old that can't stop playing Quake. you know, another part of me was like, I love Blizzard. I just want to play anything they make. Like, it just was awesome. So for me, a real high point on the video game side of things was the reveal of Overwatch and seeing this company kind of nail everything they're trying to do this year. Like, everything has gone their way with a few hiccups on launch and things with Warlords. But Warlords of Draenor became a huge hit critically. Fans love it. They're back up to 10 million subscribers. You know, who knew 10 years later they could do that? They could pull that off. And at the same time have all these other games. Hearthstone be a genuine bona fide hit that no one expected. A little game that could. And then have Overwatch be this big announcement and have everyone kind of prep for a new shooter from Blizzard. The same year they canceled a huge game. They just have an enormous advantage in this industry. And it's because of the kind of company they are. And it's no, you know, it's no mystery that I'm a huge fanboy of everything they do. But that was a huge moment for me that I'll not forget. So that was a big one.
Well, you're a Blizzard apologist. We all know this. They pay you in large cars.
Yep.
They just throw them on your lawn once a day.
Yep. I got a Lambo yesterday, a nice red one.
Yeah.
Big horn symbol.
But no,
it.
I mean, look, I was there at BlizzCon as well, and maybe I'm turning into a Blizzard fanboy also, but the release of Overwatch was electric. To, you know, to step back the perspective, I don't think people in the wider community understand what it is yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they've seen the trailer. They know what kind of game it is. I don't feel like the impact is felt outside of the BlizzCon crowd.
Agreed.
Yet. And I think that's why a lot of people may scoff, like, what, really? Overwatch? It's not even real. You can't even play it yet. And that's fine. Those are all valid reactions if you haven't seen it, you know, and you haven't played it. But it was definitely one of those things where I watched the trailer and I was like, wow, that's good. It looks like a Pixar movie. Good trailer. Mm-hmm. And then I played it and I was like, I don't even like these kinds of games and I'm having fun.
Yeah.
And I was still thinking about it later. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe it comes out and it flops. Maybe it comes out and only the Blizzard fans love it. But I kind of feel with you, like they did something special again, mm-hmm. which is pretty impressive considering just how successful Warcraft, StarCraft, Diablo have all been.
And how successful this year has been for them. It's just been a nonstop year. And how you look at those people. You talk to those guys. I got to spend a bunch of time, and another geeky moment for me would be this, was hanging out with Chris Metzen, all by our lonesome with him and his bodyguards, who didn't seem to care about what we were talking about.
All by our lonesome, just me and his bodyguards.
Yeah, me and Kim and him and his bodyguards talking about all this common ground we have with the origins of the things we love and when, you know, when Marvel had effects on us, when DC had effects on us, what we think of D&D and you know, what it's like to release a game or talk about a new release like a game like this and just kind of nerd out about those things. But I always get this impression when I look at those guys in the face, right in the eye, they are a little dumbfounded as to how big a reaction they get for all these things. Yeah. And I know maybe on a corporate or huge financial level, there is some understanding of that what they're doing is something very special in that way. But I think they just have their heads to the grindstone and they want to make rad shit. And they just keep making it and we keep wanting more of it. And they always seem a little nonplussed as to how excited everyone is. And that to me says something. I don't know what it is. There's some secret sauce there about polish, about don't release it if it sucks, about just making things because you want to, not because you have to. Don't have to hit deadlines just because there's a deadline. Like, there's something there that somebody should be able to harness and like apply to other companies, and they just don't seem to do it very often. There's a few examples, but they're about it, you know.
I think you and I both have had the experience of making something that you love, mm-hmm. and then being kind of blown away when other people love it. And we've both also had the experience of making something we love that maybe not as many people loved it as we hoped.
Sure.
But when it happens and people, you know, and people really take to it, it does blow you away. And I don't think Metzen, I was talking to Kat Hunter actually at BlizzCon, and she was like, he wasn't nervous that people wouldn't like Overwatch. It was more just the relief mm-hmm. of finally being able to get it out there, right? Mm-hmm. And then, the fact that people reacted positively was just like on top of it. They know they're good, mm-hmm. but they also, you know, they hold those things in secret for so long.
Sure.
That when it's finally out there, I think there's a little bit of like, okay, thank goodness it's out there. Mm-hmm. And then people like it on top of it. That's awesome. Hearthstone, I think, is a better example of what you're talking about than Overwatch, because I think that was sort of a side. I mean, it very clearly, they've said, was a side project.
Yeah, a couple of dudes. Know? Like, we have an idea. Can we work on it? Yeah, go ahead.
It started as a mobile game that they then decided to release on the desktop first for various technical reasons that they have now brought to iPad and Android tablets. But it has succeeded far beyond what they expected.
Yeah, no idea. So this is the year of them taking crazy risks that seem crazy by their standards. But it turns out they're not. They're just creatively breathing. Like, they're just kind of letting go. They're not white-knuckling WoW all the time. Yeah. Like, oh, we got to keep this afloat and realize, no, wait, this has afforded us the opportunity to really make some unique stuff. And it's just impressive to watch. And this felt like the year.
I was ready to be disappointed by Draenor. I was ready to make this my last expansion.
I was totally ready to be.
And
yeah, I was right with
you. And I have been sucked in. I'm still way slow in leveling compared to all y'all.
Sure.
But I am leveling much faster than I did in Mists.
Yeah.
In Mists, I can't remember, it came out in what, October?
October 2012.
And I didn't get to 100, or not 100, I didn't get to 90 until like June.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's spread out.
I'm 99.
Yeah, so you're hauling. You're hauling cheeks.
I'm halfway to 100,
and it's not the. And it's actually more. It's double the number of levels. You're not. It's not like you're doing. It's not like you're. It's not like the game is easier or anything. It's just. It is so sucking you in.
To play briefly, and that's my thing is, when I'd sit down, especially like Wrath era,
yeah.
I'd sit down. I'd be like, okay, I have to clear the decks. I have to give myself 2 to 3 hours now.
Yep.
Because I'm gonna play WoW.
Yep.
And with Draenor, I can be like, well, I only have 20 minutes, but let me just check my garrison, you know?
Yep.
And then sometimes be like, oh, yeah. I actually ended up having more time than I thought. I'll go do a couple of quests. So it's much more flexible. And the garrison, particularly for me anyway, really sucks me back in.
Yeah.
Gets because I don't have to feel like, oh, I have to go on an epic chain of quests. And the quests are better. They've done lots of things to, you know, I was just playing in Arawak. Is that how you say it?
Oh, the Spires of Arrakis.
Yeah, the Spires.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a patrol mob that just stopped, and I was waiting for him to turn around and go back like they always do, and then he got up and flew. And I was like, what? You can't do that.
Yeah, what are you doing there, buddy?
But that's great. Like, makes that area so much more interesting now.
Yeah, no, they really knocked it out of the park, and I was ready to be, like, I'll echo that. I was ready to be disappointed. I remember the announcement a year ago. I was like, okay, maybe, whatever. I just couldn't get my head around why this is going to be special, and it is really, really good.
Look, and for those of you who don't care about Blizzard, I get it. You know, if you're like, I don't know, Bungie fan, you get this excited about Bungie.
Yeah,
that's
super
totally
stoked
fair.
About Destiny. That's there you go. There's your game of the year, Destiny.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
yeah. But not us.
it's just I play Skyforce and Hearthstone of Warcraft.
Nicely done. So ice buckets were a thing. What do you think about all that in retrospect? It was an interesting trend, you know?
Both hate and love it.
Yeah.
The thing I didn't like about it was the peer pressure aspect of it. Like, you have to dump ice on your head now. I'm like, well, wouldn't it be better if I just donated?
Yeah.
You know, no, you have to do the ice because then it inspires the others. And I was like, at this point, I think it's out of, you know, it's my not doing the ice wouldn't get in its way.
Sure.
But I made a token effort. I dumped a cup of ice on my head. Because there was also this backlash of like, don't dump ice on your head. There's a drought in California.
Oh, right.
For Californians, anyway.
Sure.
And it was like, okay, well, I'll reuse the ice and I'll water a plant with it, which I did. I literally picked up the ice after I dumped it on my head.
Sure.
On the morning stream. But then there were the people like, this is dumb. It doesn't do anything to help the world. I'm like, no, actually, this is the kind of silly stuff that hacks our brains and makes us think about an important issue like ALS and raise a lot of money for it. Are there other important issues that didn't get attention? Sure.
Absolutely.
But that's like, you know, the zero-sum game. You're like, well, we shouldn't raise money for anything because my favorite charity didn't get money raised for it. Sure. I think it was a good thing overall.
I do too. It's just, don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it. So as a as a specific trend and one that kind of crossed all the nerd lines on the internet, it seemed pretty pervasive. It was hard to get away from it, hard to avoid it. Yeah, it was easy to get tired of it, and yeah, it was easy to be kind of irritated with the weaknesses of it or this kind of program. But in the end, made a ton of money for a big, for an important cause. Having had somebody related to my wife who died of ALS at a very young age, you know, there's something personal about that, and it was great to see that. At the same time, it makes me wonder, you know, what is the next? I don't know what the next thing is. What are we dumping on our heads next? I don't know. I can't predict it. No idea.
Grape juice.
There you go. That's it.
Grape juice to fight acne.
Unpasteurized goat milk.
Unpasteurized goat milk to fight food poisoning.
There it is. And if you eat any of it, good luck with that.
You know, it reminds me of the yellow wristbands.
Oh, yeah.
Live Strong. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Movement. Sure. That was the analog world's ice bucket challenge of its day.
And this one is, you know, this one, well, whatever. You can see a million fail videos online now that are the great legacy of the ice bucket challenge where people got genuinely hurt or, you know, did terrible ideas or mm-hmm. whatever. But I feel like there is a, whenever something like this happens, it's the Minecraftification of the world. Everybody wants to duplicate it, and it's very hard to do. It's because the minute you say, well, we've got the wet rag challenge for raising awareness or whatever, and it never goes the same.
You can't just do it again.
No, nope. Yeah, you can't duplicate it. So once again, 2015, 2014, we still can't duplicate viral things. There is only one Gundam style, and that's it.
It's kind of in the definition of viral, is that you can't just make it up. You can't. It goes back to what I was saying about no mass culture, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing where the viral thing breaks is a virus tends to mutate and then spread again. That doesn't happen so much with like a viral video or whatever, right? Like the Psy video, he's never going to see that number again. There's no way. It's not even a possibility that they're going to have to, that Google will have to change their actual algorithm to accommodate the views that video got.
Yeah, the immune system of the internet learns the signature of that virus.
Yeah.
And fights against it from then on.
We eradicate it, really.
Yeah.
But then there it is.
Has to mutate to a totally different form.
It's almost like we've taken a virus. Imagine taking a virus, something that killed a million people, and we've contained it now, and it's now, we put it under glass, and anytime you want to, you can just go look at it. You just go stare at it. You know what I mean? That's what this is.
The virus of the 1914 flu. Too soon? Too soon?
A little soon.
Everything's too soon.
Some people are still affected by the... No, no one is. I think they've all died, I think.
Fall of Rome? Ooh, too soon.
For me, another one would have been the discovering just how awesome Gotham Central is, the comic book series from DC.
Yeah.
When it came to comic books this year, there were a lot of good things to read. The resurgence of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and other stuff. Marvel's continued dominance in the theaters. New TV shows like The Flash and Arrow doing well. All that stuff just driving new comic book sales, which is great, from the mainstream publishers. I never had heard until Comic Dork's friend and pal Steven Schleicher had mentioned it. I'd never heard of Gotham Central. And it came up in a conversation where we were like, oh, how's Gotham on Fox? Oh, it's okay, but I sure wish it was more like Gotham Central. And I thought, well, what the crap is that? So I picked it up, originally published in 02, 03, something like that. That is an amazing series and completely absorbing, and I have not been able to stop reading it since I started with that first issue and cannot recommend it enough. I realize it's old and I should have been on the stick earlier than this, but it's the kind of thing, Tom, I don't know if you ever find these occasionally. Like in some ways I feel like this is the Lord of the Game of Thrones kind of deal.
Yeah.
Those books sit on shelves for a decade before anyone finally takes notice. Whatever that tipping point is, it took forever to freaking get there. And I feel like Gotham Central, probably to a lot of insiders who are really paying attention, were like, ooh, Brubaker and these guys, I love their work, and they were in all the way. But for the mainstream audience, Batman's not even in this comic very much. He's barely in it, and usually is someone you kind of are irritated with because he's always messing around with how real police work gets done, and you know, it's always a big conflict there, which makes it brilliant. But you don't, when you look at it on the surface, you're like, there's no Batman. And there were already read a Batman comic that doesn't have Batman in it. That's stupid. On to the next comic book. It's a shame because it's just amazing. One of the best written books I have ever read. And I discovered it this year, and that was a huge find for me. Do you have any comics that jumped out at you? Like,
I didn't read enough comics this year. We mentioned that on Kurt Geek last week, and a bunch of people gave me lots of great suggestions. Mm. My problem is that beyond like, catching up on Walking Dead comic every 6 months or less, which is essentially what I do. I binge on it after a few months have gone by. I'm reading so much for Sword and Laser that I don't have time to read comics. And then I'm viewing things for Cord Killers, so I don't have as much time for video games. Like, video games and comics are the victims of my reading and TV watching requirements.
Mm-hmm.
I did read a lot of amazing science fiction as part of Sword and Laser. And The Martian is one of
so good.
Cannot stop talking about it. It almost seems cliche at this point because so many people who read it love it.
Yeah.
But it's that good.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, like, if you haven't checked out The Martian by Andy Weir and you have any interest in realistic science fiction, I don't want to say hard sci-fi because that's almost become like a trollish term.
Sure.
Like, people use it as an insult, and then it just causes a big, long debate about what is hard sci-fi. But this is realistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100% accurate because he wanted to tell a good story. So he had to, you know, stretch belief in a couple of places, but not much.
It's what it's kind
it's
of a what if.
Really dramatic.
It's sort of what if near future to me is how it felt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good way to put it. And none of it felt like, oh, we're going to make a bunch of stuff up that isn't very plausible just to, you know, create plot devices or whatever. It felt like something that very well could happen. And it's really awesome. That whenever that movie gets made, I am so first in line for that because that was an awesome read. Tell me about, was there any progress with net neutrality in 2014? Because that's always a topic. It's always a thing.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing that happened this year, right, was people who didn't care or had heard about net neutrality have now heard about it, right? It hit the mainstream for good or for ill. When it started, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, in January is when Verizon won their court case overturning the FCC's then current guidelines that prevented certain kinds of discrimination. And the reason for the overturning of the court decision was that the court said, you're using Section 706 of the Communications Act to justify this, and that's wrong. That part, which basically talks about, closing the digital divide, making sure that there's, you know, competition. Like, that part doesn't allow you to do the things you did in your guidelines. We're like, and the court said specifically, we think you have the justification to do it, but you have to use different regulations. And we see that you have this thing called common carrier under Title II of the Telecommunications Act. We think that would justify those things. But since you're using Section 706 to justify it, we're going to throw the guidelines out because you're not using the proper justification.
Mm.
And that led to everything exploding. And a lot of people behind the scenes say that other companies are very upset at Verizon for doing that.
Mm.
And the rest is history. The rest is, you know, the FCC and Tom Wheeler saying, we're going to propose internet guidelines that would allow a little bit of discrimination under certain conditions. And then everybody blew up. And then they said, well, okay, we're tearing that up. We're not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And then they took comments and they got millions of comments. And then it became a political football. And then the president got in on it. And that just kind of ruined Tom Wheeler's day. And I guess today, as we're recording this, they've now said that they're going to take a vote on in February on what net neutrality should be.
This is good because what you've described is what I think wins the day, and that's transparency and understanding of topics and people talking about it to the point where the public can't just have it happen in the background and them not know about it. You get it in enough public consciousness, you just can't sneak it through. It's not like some weird pork belly thing. People will catch it, will know if something screwy is going on, and that seems good to me.
I like that you called it a pork belly thing. Mm. I don't even know if that's accurate, but it's so right.
It's
sneaking the pork
way.
In under the belly.
Yeah, right? It's just a little just sticking it right in there. All right. Well, there you go. That's good. I also, I think it's important to note, this was the year that we learned that Marvel, yes, they can take their Captain America and their Iron Man and whatever, and they can make those into big movies, and they can take the mainstream Avengers approach and do a successful thing. But can they? Oh dear, can they take something weird ass like, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which most people didn't even know about before this movie? Can they take that particular comic property and turn it into something successful, well-liked, critically acclaimed, and so on? And they totally did. to everybody's surprise, even those who were hyped and excited about it, even they were a little surprised about how good that thing turned out. So it's a big year for that. That's a big thing because it means a lot for the future of what they have already lined up. Weird projects like Ant-Man and others where we're not so familiar with the subject matter, and even the subject matter itself is kind of dubious in terms of its wide appeal, but they've proven they can do it because Guardians of the Galaxy should have not have worked, and it totally worked. And people cheered for a CGI raccoon. I just want to remind people that you cheered for that character. Previous to this, he had Howard the Duck status in a lot of people's minds.
What's a raccoon?
Exactly. It's awesome. So, grats to them and Feig and everybody at Marvel who figured that out and made it so that we'll probably get more of those in the future. And as I say this, there is also another trend this year, or a lot of people complaining about this trend, that is the major studios and movie going as an experience in general has turned into blockbusters only and superhero movies and science fiction giant things or Hobbit movies or whatever. That's all it is now. And they kind of have a point. There are not as many small. There's the big Oscar push stuff toward the end of the year. You're always going to have that.
But you know, I was reading an article with Terry Gilliam, and he was complaining about exactly that. He's like, there's no middle ground.
Yeah.
You can get money to do a $40 million or less film on an indie budget that's going to go and win the awards at the festivals. And you can get blockbuster money, but that's it.
Yep.
Nothing in between.
And here's the thing. I've seen a parallel between this and the video game industry. It's the same. Call it a problem or call it a good thing. I don't know. But you have the big blockbuster, mega hit, Call of Duty stuff on one side. And on the other side, you have small indie titles that are amazing and incredible and whatever. I don't. If the video game model where it's the B level or the middle level stuff has disappeared, if this is any comparison to movies, it might be actually a good thing. Because if the movie theater is the only place I can get that huge, loud, wonderful visual experience that I'm going to get from Avatar 2 or a new Alien movie or whatever, fine. That's the venue. But where I get the smaller, quieter, thought-provoking stuff is going to continue to be TV and streaming and downloadables and rentals and places where that stuff is thriving right now. I don't actually see it as a terrible thing. I mean, a lot of these filmmakers just are sad that their stuff isn't in that megaplex anymore. But I'm not sure they should be so sad about that. They've got a billion venues and a million deals to make that are more lucrative than any studio is going to give them to put their work out there and have a bigger audience and a bigger return. So I'm actually that worked up about it. I think it's fine. In fact, I think it's good news for movies because theaters will always have a beeline on the big, loud, you know, event movies. And I don't have a problem with it. It's totally fine. I don't have to go see The King's Speech in a movie theater. I do want to see Avengers 2 there, but I sure can get The King's Speech on Netflix exclusive or freaking some other, you know, whatever. I'm fine with that.
You know, it's funny. We went to see the Imitation Game.
Yeah.
Which is the movie about Alan Turing.
Yeah, in the Cumberbatch deal. Yeah.
And we also went to see Into the Woods. Mm. One of them had a much bigger budget than the other.
Yeah.
And we really enjoyed The Imitation Game in the theater. Yeah. That's a movie that very easily could be described like you're describing The King's Speech. Like, yeah, we could just waited, watch
sure
it at home.
Sure.
It didn't need a big blockbuster experience. Into the Woods, on the other hand, that's, you know, lots of special effects and singing with the great audio. Bored. Just bored. Both of us. Yeah. Just like, well, is it still going? Are they still? And that's an unfortunate disservice to the amazing actors and amazing singing in that movie.
Sure, the whole production.
But it just didn't work. And we were talking about it, and I said, you know what I think it is? We have an expectation when we go to a theater that we've spent time, we've spent frustration parking, we've spent a little bit of money, and more money all the time, and we really expect you to deliver on that. I'm like, if we had watched Into the Woods at home, you know, we might not have been as bored, or we would have been checking our phones. We wouldn't have been as frustrated, right?
Sure.
But it was this idea that, like, man, we went through all this trouble to go here, and this is what we got.
Sure.
You know, where when you're at home, you have a much different way of judging things. Imitation Game, not nearly as big of a budget, although full of British stars. If you watch any of the British shows like Downton Abbey and stuff, mm-hmm. you're going to see all kinds of people in there.
Sure.
It blew us away.
Yeah.
So to me, it's not even just about like you need the blockbusters because of the theater experience. I think you're right. I don't disagree with you. But it's also like you really, if you're going to go to the trouble to have that big theater experience, which is cool, it's not something you can reproduce at home.
Sure.
The movie really needs to be good.
Yeah, I completely, entirely agree. And they're going to, I think it's, I mean, on the whole, you're going to get better experiences there, but they're going to lean toward big, explosive summer blockbusters. And if somebody told you the Turing movie was going to be on Netflix exclusive and they were going to have it for 3 years or something, you guys would have probably watched it there. Or if it was on some big cable network, or if it was some HBO thing or something else, like you probably would have been fine with that. Because you're already equating those sources with good quality entertainment.
Well, there's also the timing. Like, we want to see it before the award shows.
Sure, sure.
So when we're making our awards ballots out, you know, we're award show nerds in that respect.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if it was day and date, I mean, we did not go to a theater to see The Interview.
Right.
We rented it and watched it at home. Yeah. Actually, I bought it.
How was it? I still haven't seen
it.
That's what I heard. All this stink over a terrible, dumb movie.
We talked about it a lot on Cord Killers on Spoiler in Time, if you want to know my full thoughts. But Brian expressed my perfect opinion of it, which is an infrastructure, a skeleton, built to hold 5 or 6 really funny moments.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Which Brian was he was giving it a positive review when he said that. He loved it for that same reason. It's because it's all about expectations, I guess.
Well, those two guys are basically analogs for Justin and Brian anyway. That's something they would try to do. They would try to get in a plane and see what they could do about the North Korean regime. It seems like a thing that they might try.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
All right. I've got a couple more here. I'm going to just mention this one. Seeing VR take center stage and becoming something special this year, I think, is kind of a big deal. And part of that was just a huge financial influx of money toward it via Facebook in the case of Oculus, Sony getting behind Morpheus.
Project
although,
Morpheus.
Yeah, although we don't know. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen much since then. At all.
I have a feeling we might hear something about it at CES.
Yeah, it seems likely. Well, this is next week, so we'll know soon. If I assume Sony will do something there, because Oculus will do something there. But yeah,
Samsung.
And to see VR take to actually be a thing and actually work. And we've talked about it on this show before, but just see it be more than gimmick, more than flash in the pan, doesn't really work the way they say it will. You know, this is miles beyond projects like Kinect or the Wii or anything else where that's sort of pseudo cool, but not really that cool. This thing's genuinely cool and potentially world changing. I mean, it really could be. Talk about your interface changes. I mean, this really could be one of them, if not the biggest one in the history of how we interact with our world. That may be a little hyperbole, but I'm super stoked about it. And to see it take on the legitimacy it deserves and get the development cash and influx it needs to take it further is super cool for us guys like us. I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah. In fact, I almost feel like you're going to have the same feeling at the end of this year.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just going to get even better this year.
Yeah, it's like 3D printing or any of those things.
Yeah,
it just gets better and better. Now, you wrote on this list, we experience too many cooks. I am dying to know what that means.
Did you not see the too many cooks theme?
No. Did I miss something?
Oh, my gosh.
What
you're
did I
missing
miss?
Out. Your 2014 isn't over yet, Scott. You've got to go watch Too Many Cooks.
All right.
It was actually I think it was it wasn't Nick.
Oh, Adult Swim.
It was Adult Swim, yeah. It was an Adult Swim thing that went viral on the internets. Mm. One of the Know Your Meme moments of the year. And I cannot get the song out of my head sometimes.
Oh, my gosh. How did I completely miss this?
Yeah, it's just to be prepared, folks, it is a 12-minute video starting as an introduction to a mythical sitcom, kind of early 90s style. Called Too Many Cooks.
Yeah, but I assume like their other short that started as a commercial for allergies turned into something very different. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's their other one. I assume it's something in that vein-ish, kind of? Okay, that's all you have to say.
Just watch.
I'll watch it. Yeah, I'd seen the bear in the woods one or whatever, but I haven't seen this, so I'm now bookmarking it. How did I miss that? Oh, I guess it was just November. It's not like I missed it in June or something.
No, it's only been out for a couple months.
But yeah, now,
it was tearing up the internet for a while. Right, we played it on Chord Killers. They played it on Night Attack. Mm. It was all over the place for a while.
Well, good for Adult Swim. They've done a lot of that lately. And their mobile games.
Yeah, kind of, it was kind of weird feeling when I watched this and I'm like, what a clever viral video. Who made this? Oh, a big company.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a big company didn't make it. Really creative people who work at that big company made it.
Sure, sure.
But it's like, you know, the playing field really is level. Because who cares it was made by Adult Swim?
Yeah, it's getting to that point where we don't care anymore. Oh, Funny or Die? Cool, they got the budget. Oh, yeah. Some guy in his basement? Cool, that's even cooler because he did it in his basement. Like, the democratization of all this stuff is bananas. All right, last thing I would
be proud.
Yes, yes. I would say the last thing for me that really got me this year, and I could list a bunch of other personal stuff like, oh, Nerdtacular was the best we've ever had, and it totally was. It was amazing this year. Totally had a blast. Can't wait to do it again. People were amazing there. It just was a great event. But what came down to maybe the nerdiest thing or the geekiest thing for me, maybe the proudest moment for me, and I apologize for indulging in myself a little bit here, but I noticed one night a couple of months ago, it hit me like just out of the blue, and I don't know why it took so long for me to sort of just see this. But it was one night when all the kids were around. Taylor was over with her then fiance, although he was just her boyfriend then. But they were all hanging out at the house, and I noticed that everybody was kind of all quietly doing something, and nobody was making a big noise, or it wasn't a lot of stuff going on. And I was hanging out with Kim, and I went out and I noticed every single one of my kids was doing some nerdy thing. Nick was 3D modeling for the first time in Maya because he wants to make a video game. My oldest was doing her photography blog and was getting ready to launch that to try to drum up a bunch of interest in her photo work. And my middle-aged daughter, my daughter is 17, the one in the middle.
Middle daughter, not middle-aged.
She was busy on a Wacom making an animated film for the Adobe animated film project thing that she entered in and won, by the way, which was crazy. And to just realize that I have gone ahead without even thinking about it very much, I've raised 3 heirs to the content creation throne. Just felt really good all of a sudden. Just like, look at them all making shite that's totally rad. And they're all enjoying it and they're making things, like they're making stuff. They're not just consuming things, there's a billion things to consume in today's world, but they're making cool stuff. And I was just, that was one of those moments where I was like, I think I could do a lot worse than that, you know?
And I want to hasten to add, I've not followed Scott's parental patterns for his entire life or anything, but having been around you and your kids, you don't pressure them. You're not sitting there guilting them into being geeky.
No, never.
It's just them doing what you do is like, you know what? If you're interested in something and it's not against the law, go for it.
Exactly. If you're not going to keep me and your mother up all night worrying about whatever, then we're all in. But they've just all sort of naturally fallen into those niches. I'm sure some of that is watching me and the people I associate with, like Tom and Brian and all my internet friends, see them doing these sorts of things, and they get excited about it, and they come to Nerdtacular and they see what can come of all that. I just think it's just created something super cool. So I it makes me just not worry about them. It makes me, you know, excited for what's next for them. What world will they be in? What nerdy stuff will they have, and how will they consume it? What interface will they use? You know, when will they discover that Gotham Central was underappreciated 40 years previously? Like, it's just exciting time to see a different generation, regardless of whether you're out there and you're a parent or not. I think it's heartening to see statistics like teenage violence is at an all-time low, yet creativity seems to be at an all-time high. Like, there are really strong signals in a world that wants you to think everything's falling apart, that it's actually kind of coming together.
Yeah.
And
there was a great article that I tweeted out, I think New Year's Eve, showing the statistics that show that on the whole, the world's been getting better.
Yeah.
Like, we don't think about it because we're so used to seeing the, you know, horrible things. And there are plenty of horrible things. It's not to say there aren't. But when you like step back and look at the wider picture, like you say, things like teen violence, things like crime, even things like terrorism, which you would think, oh, no, but that's on the rise, right? Mm. Over the long term, no.
Yeah,
it's actually down. less now than it used to be.
It's down. Things are more open. Things are, it's so easy to want to think something's up, but it's sometimes things are going great. And I
honestly, that's why I always play that devil's advocate when we look at tech stories, sure. Because it's easy to just have the knee-jerk reaction of like, oh, these things are going to cause these negative effects. And usually those negative effects are certainly something to be concerned about. But look at, you know, oh, kids on their phones. They're always on their phones these days. Why are they always on their phones? Well, part of the reason they're on their phones is wasting time Snapchatting. But the other reason is they're using a computer and they're learning about apps and they're creating things on their phones, which is giving them access to way more information than you and I ever had access to, which is allowing them to learn more about how the world works faster. That doesn't mean that they're perfect, but there are tons of positive effects of that. And you know what? I don't think you're wrong to point out your own children as good examples of that, because they are.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? You know, when I'm old, I need somebody to carry the damn flag because I can't carry it anymore.
I need somebody to carry me.
Hey, Eileen, we got a little job for you. Well, that's basically our stuff for the year that we think ranks as, kind of the geekiest moments of the year, the things that we remembered that affected us and so on. We'd love to hear some of yours. As always, you can email us and send your feedback to currentgeek@gmail.com or send us phone messages at 801-471-0462. All that stuff is welcome. Of course, grab us on Twitter and all that sort of stuff. Tom, any parting thoughts before we let the fine folks go?
Man, 2014 was an awesome year.
It was a great year.
So many things to be thankful for. The Sword and Laser Anthology came out. Mm-hmm. Daily Tech News Show started. This show started.
Yeah.
I am excited to see where things go in 2015. And man, I just want to thank you. This was really fun.
Oh, thanks,
just
man.
Sitting you and I chatting. And I'm so honored that you're willing to let me play in your sandbox.
Yeah, our joint sandbox. We have a little tunnel between sandboxes, and it's nice to be able to go to each other's occasionally and hang out in there. But I concur entirely, and it wouldn't be fair for us to leave this episode without thanking this year's guests, and that is to say the entire run of Current Geeks guests for the last year. They've all been fan-freaking-tastic.
And now we will name them all individually and their middle names, home addresses.
Yep. And then I'll forget most of them and then feel bad. So there you go. That's all of them. No, they were all amazing. You guys are great. And so many of you, those of you who are guests and listen to the show, you're on a list. So be prepared. You may be called upon again. And we got kind of some fun potential plans next week. I don't want to leak into that too soon because we're kind of sewing that up. But we'll let you guys know about that. But we'll be back with guests and our regular format and all that stuff. And for a wonderful 2015 or 2015 is my hope. So I guess that's it. And you still get our calendar, by the way. Go to frogpants.com/store and the tech history calendar for all of 2015, man. It's right there.
Most of the days are still fresh.
That's right. Fresh and ready to have something done to them. I don't know what that means. I think that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. Currentgeek.com is our website. You can leave us a message again at 801-471-0462. Currentgeek@gmail.com. Let's see, currentgeek.reddit.com. Keep that up. That's it for us. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
They had released his three dragons. Quickly slaughtered their armies. House Gardner was destroyed, and the field would later become known as the Field of Fire. The Lannisters and the remaining stewards of the Gardners, the Tyrells, surrendered the Reach. They got that name now. Each, Lords Paramount of the Reach, and Lords Paramount of the Westerlands. With evidence of Aegon's superior power and lots of diplomacy, the Starks and Aerys surrendered peacefully. The High Septon then declared the faith of the Seven supported Aegon, which removed Aegon's last obstacle. The war was ended with Dorne. There were attempts to take Dorne, however, the Dornish fought them from the mountains using guerrilla tactics. Aegon's Dragonfire was useless against them. Eventually, he decided to allow the Dornish to keep their independence. I'm Jamie. You can reach me at TyriusLanding.com or TyriusLanding@gmail.com.
Podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.